At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Omar Al-Khatib, Director of Corporate Affairs and Investor Relations. Please go ahead, Mr. Al-Khatib.
Thank you. Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us, and welcome to our first quarter conference call. On the line with us today, we have Murad Al-Khatib, President and CEO of Alliance Grain Traders, and Lori Ireland, our Chief Financial Officer. Before we get started, I would like to remind everyone that today's call may include forward-looking statements. Such forward-looking statements are given as of the date of this call and involve certain risks and uncertainties. A number of factors and assumptions were applied in the formulation of such statements, and actual results could differ materially. This call may also include references to certain non-GAAP financial measures. For additional information with respect to forward-looking statements, factors and assumptions, as well as reconciliation with GAAP measures, we direct you to our news release and our recent MD&A filed on SEDAR. I'll now turn this over to Murad for some comments, and then we'll go to questions.
Thank you, Omar. I'd like to thank you all as well for joining us on our first quarter 2010 conference call. It's certainly been an exciting time in our business, and I'd like to continue to share with you some of the developments we've seen unfold, some of our future plans to continue to grow this business. For the past two quarters, we've been speaking with shareholders and analysts on the strong harvest results of 2009 and then the robust export data through late 2009, early 2010 continues to demonstrate the strong demand for our products in every market in which we're active. As well, growing conditions in the new origins we have looked to diversifying our crop sourcing activities are showing very strong promise as we move forward. We are now shifting from 2009 crop in Canada to seeding for 2010 crop year, and we wait for the start of the Turkish harvest season. New challenges and opportunities are unfolding before us. As for the opportunities, export data from Canada and U.S. sources show the North American pulse industry has more than made up for the late harvest with heavy shipping up to cutoff of early 2010. Alliance Grain, with its operations in Canada and the USA, has been no exception. With such strong exports in the past 6 months, on-farm stocks are tight, as farmers have been willing to sell more at higher prices, and backed by customer demand, processors have been willing to purchase more for processing. There remains a significant price premium for current crop stocks in comparison to new crop 2010 contracting levels. As AGTI nears the end of this crop year and transitions to 2010-2011 harvest in August in Canada, the price disparity between old and new crop stocks is expected to converge. The convergence in price is facilitated by matching Canadian farmer selling to international client buying. And this convergence, while we feel it is coming, has been slow. And this is affecting our demand forecast for the middle part of 2010. International buyers are very sensitive to price in the time of transition between new crop in Canada with the September harvest to Australia in December, to India in March, and to Turkey in June. In a time of declining commodity prices, demand is affected as importers are cautious in their purchases and only buy bare requirements, and do not hold any excess stock levels for fear that international market prices will decline and that they will lose on their inventory values. This is a normal and temporary rationalization of demand that we have seen in years past that will end up catching up in subsequent time periods as importers delay buying decisions temporarily, but eventually stocks must come into markets to satisfy consumer demands for pulse products and protein. AGTI's success over this past quarter has come from our ability during the annual convergence periods that we have seen come and go each year to match available stock from growers in all of our origins to international client buying and demand to the benefit of all, including our company and, of course, our shareholders. In doing this, we have reported sales for the first quarter 2010 of $186.3 million compared to $86.8 million for the same period in 2009, which is an increase of 115%. Of course, this reflects the new company post-acquisition, and we have transformed this company into a much larger size. Now, EBITDA has also increased 100% to $21.9 million from $10.9 million in quarter one 2009. And all of our first quarter 2010 financial results are, of course, available on SEDAR or from our website at alliancegrain.com. Management is pleased with the strong numbers in the two quarters since the Arbel acquisition. But these strong results are the result of strategic work we've done for many years, culminating in the acquisition of Arbel, Finora, and Parent Seeds, and the implementation of our diversification strategy that has allowed us to maximize and grow our business. This growth is allowing us to continue this new chapter of our business that we undertook through this transformational acquisition of Arbel in 2009. We have remained focused on our plan we've set in motion because we're confident that this is the roadmap to our growth for the company and for delivering solid, consistent earnings to our shareholders. The challenges, though, are real as well. The core products that AGTI produces are profitable crops for farmers. Let's face it, everyone wants to make money, and farmers are no different. With high prices to farmers, they're reacting as any business would, and that is to do more of the same to maximize their returns. This has resulted in unprecedented seeding levels in Canada and in the U.S., with Statistics Canada and USDA projecting acres at about 3.385 million acres in Canada and the U.S. So with these types of increases in Canada, North Dakota, and Montana, we are expecting much more significant supplies in North America. And crop levels in Turkey are returning to historical levels as well. Australia will seed in June 2010 into adequate moisture, and the Indian harvest in March was again below expectations. So this creates strong demand fundamentals. These are all good news parts of our story, but all of this additional supply will present challenges. The significant estimated quantities that will require processing and movement are unprecedented, and again, the dramatic jump in acres over the past 10 years is an affirmation of the positive nature of growing pulses. However, growing it is one thing, and moving it as a food to satisfy consumer demand for pulse products and protein are another. And as we've stated in the past, we feel Alliance Grain is well positioned to capitalize on the opportunities that the additional supply can present. We've talked a number of times previously concerning our integration efforts, which is on time and going according to our plans. With the Arbel acquisition, the two businesses worked together extensively in the past and shared a common culture and practice. The tuck-in acquisitions are being integrated as we expected. No surprises there. We've talked about potential for acreage increases and seeding intention reports in Canada and the U.S. The growth in acres appears to be upon us. What we've not talked about enough is the fact that we have the capacity ready to ramp up as needed in our plants around the world. When we were in acquisition mode through 2009, the question did come to us, why do you need all these facilities? Well, with the acres out there, it's becoming clear it is not the facilities, but the capacity that they represent that is key to our future growth. With this much product out there in all major origins, the capacity needs to be put in place before the product needs to be processed and shipped. If it is not there, you've missed the opportunity, and we do not intend to miss opportunities that are before us. Our facilities are well located. We have established strong logistical relationships with Canadian Pacific, Canadian National Rail, BNSF Railways, and international steamship lines. We have flexible production capacity that will continue to be utilized during peak seasonal demand, and we'll continue in our efforts to develop opportunities to utilize these assets more effectively in non-peak periods through finding new products and geographies to ship year-round. In order to better capitalize on the opportunities, we need to be financially strong. We feel the strength of our balance sheet is one of the key assets in implementing our strategy. The completion of the $80 million equity financing in April 2010 will assist us in executing our plans for growth, both organically and through more tuck-in acquisitions. We have a strong management team, a solid business, and strong consumer demand fundamentals. And our strategy and direction is clear as we work to realize the full potential of our business for the benefit of our producers, customers, and shareholders. Management remains confident in our strategy and our team. And there are a number of key strategic drivers underlying this confidence. Number one, tuck-in acquisitions in core areas of strength will continue to bolster our growth prospects. We're continuing to examine quality acquisition opportunities in the area of dry edible beans, chickpeas, pasta, and rice. with a focus on smaller asset acquisitions that expand the reach of the company and its core business platforms. This strategy has been successful, and earnings accretion for shareholders has been virtually immediate. Number two, we have a strong global growth strategy, and management team has a track record. You know, I think we now have the reputation of our ability to access the public equity markets, deliver strong financial performance, and with the steady demand of our products, coupled with our ability to integrate acquisitions and bring them online very quickly, we have a solid path and foundation for which to build and prosper. Boosting our capacity utilization will also support our objective to have positive earnings growth in 2010 and beyond. Third reason is, of course, the addition of new products and product lines. We've talked a lot about the milled Durham wheat platform, bringing on parent seeds and entering the bean area, and taking a look at all of these new products that we've added into our mix has certainly allowed us to ensure that we're going to be very competitive going forward. And I keep repeating, number four, the demand fundamentals continue to be strong. I mean, global populations continue to consume protein and staple food products. The foods that we produce are customary and are relatively inelastic in their demand profiles. And non-traditional markets, for example, North America and Europe, are increasing consumption of certain pulses, adding food and ingredient markets to AGTI's market development targets. With our efficient value-added processing, freight and logistical advantages, diversified markets and origins, and a well-instituted risk management program, we're going to capitalize on these opportunities going forward. I think the last point that I wanted to make is I want to ensure that that our investors know our diversification strategy is very focused. AGTI will seek to grow as it executes this strategy, and the strategy will really be focused on four key platforms. I keep mentioning beans, chickpeas, pasta, and rice. And management continues to seek to build international sales opportunities, acquisition opportunities of the tuck-in nature, to ensure that we investigate additional opportunities for these acquisitions, partnership, and alliances in the Americas, Turkey, and globally. I think I'm going to end my comments there and open it up for questions.
Thank you. Certainly, sir. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. If you are using a speakerphone, please lift the handset before pressing any keys. In order to accommodate as many callers as possible, one question from each person will be taken. To ask a supplemental question, please press star and one again to rejoin the question queue. Time does not allow for response to all of the questions. The Alliance Grain Traders Investor Relations Group will follow up after the call. Anyone who has a question may press star and one at this time. First question is from Mark Robinson of Cormark Securities. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys. Good afternoon.
Hey, Mark. How are you?
Good, thanks. Just wanted to ask about, you talk about the incremental capacity you've built, and, you know, there's commentary in the disclosure that talks about how at Finora this quarter, even though the deal had closed, you know, it was just managed as a tolling business. So to try and get a sense of what that business can actually do if you had full leverage to it, can you give us some metrics or what anything you can provide on, you know, how much volume was actually done out of Finora, or maybe just on a qualitative basis, how that business is ramping up and what you expect to see out of that going forward?
Yeah, good question. Just to clarify, I mean, under the asset purchase agreement with Noble Resources, Noble Grain out of Asia, when we purchased a Finora assets, part of the agreement was an undertaking by Alliance to assist them in an orderly wind down of that particular business for them, because they were doing a complete exit of the pulses and special crops business. So, you know, realistically, Mark, until about March the 20th or so, which basically encompassed the entire quarter, we were actually executing on just a toll processing fee for service basis for Noble to allow them to wind down Finora. And so as a result of that, I mean, we were, you know, in essence, foregoing major parts of our margin stream in that transition phase for that particular business unit. So, you know, no origination margins, no marketing margins, you know, we're basically just charging them a fee, which recovered part of our cost and maybe made us a little bit of margin on top. So, you know, I think that ultimately when I look at the Finora acquisition, it's a very substantial capacity that we have acquired. And I believe actually effective on Friday last week, we've actually shut down that plant, the major Finora Wilkie plant. We're doing a major expansion slash revision of the capacity both there and in the Assiniboia, Saskatchewan plant to tool it up and get it ready for a new crop season starting in, let's say, mid-August. So we're adding, you know, optical color sorting for lentil shipping at the Finora Wilkie facility, and we're adding additional equipment to be able to handle our B90 chickpea program at the Assiniboia factory. So, you know, we wanted to take these assets, which we bought very cost-effectively, and make some, you know, minor, you know, dollar investments, you know, a couple of million-dollar investment to, you know, update and revise the capacity so that we could change the use of the facilities. Because Finora was shipping a very large volume of peas into the Asia market and into China and India. And that margin profile just, you know, we'll do some of that business, but it just doesn't fit what we're doing in terms of our, you know, overall margin focus. So those plants will be commissioned up to focus on lentils, on chickpeas, and on some higher value, let's say, green peas for the canning industry. So we think it's going to be a very significant acquisition. They'll be ready to go by, you know, end of July, and they're certainly going to be a good contributor for the upcoming season.
Okay, great. Thanks very much.
The next question comes from Keith Carpenter of Canaccord. Please go ahead.
Great, thank you. Hi, Murad. Just had a question on, there was a boost in sales resulting from lower margin sales to some new markets, obviously positive to your bottom line. Should we look for further such sales occurring more frequently, or will they be more one-offs? And on that, if you can tell us what the sales dollar amount was for the UN tender.
Yeah, okay, just to clarify a little bit, I mean, you know, Keith, the bottom line is the pursuit of different opportunities for us is driven by sometimes how busy we are in our core business. And, you know, when I look at the last quarter, in particular in Turkey and in quarter one, you know, we had an absence of available stocks of local lentils, so we were relying entirely on Canadian or Australian product arriving into that market, which kept the pulses business, you know, quite busy. But when we look at the new market segments of rice and durum wheat milling, we were actually successful on a major Turkish grain board tender, which was up to, I think it was 20,000 tons, about $14 million of sales, you know, which when we look at those tenders, that was actually for Egyptian origin rice shipped into Turkey. So these only passed our logistics, warehousing, and distribution. They didn't touch our plants at all in terms of being processed. And so you do go after those opportunities because when, in a time where you're not so busy, you need to generate margin. With the United Nations tenders, it was Bulgur wheat, and there was a major initiative for Africa, you know, released by the World Food Program. And that's usually about once a year they'll do a major tendering program on wheat, and we were successful on about 14,000 tons in that as well. So, you know, these opportunities are there. They're not reoccurring every quarter, but certainly when we have available capacity, it allows us to ramp up and maybe inflates a bit the sales figures, but, you know, it doesn't deliver the same margin profile, but certainly very positive margin. So we're going to continue on that path of when those opportunities are there, we'll take them. And, Keith, that's what having available capacity does for you, is it allows you to take those opportunities and add some earnings when you need them.
Okay. Do you have that understood? That's perfect. Do you have that sales figure for the UN?
You know what? I don't have it exactly handy. I mean, I have a guess, but we can get you that figure and give it to you, Keith.
Perfect. Thank you.
You know, if you wanted my range of it, I think it was, you know, somewhere around, I think it would have been, combined with the Turkish grain board, it probably would have been about 20, $22 to $25 million of the quarter. So, you know, it's a very substantial portion of that $186 million.
That's good. Thank you.
The next question comes from Anup Prahar of GMP Securities.
Good afternoon. I just had a question on the balance sheet. I noticed your inventory at $130 million is the highest it's ever been. And given that my understanding is you guys don't take on inventory risk, I'm wondering if you can help me understand why that number is as high as it is.
Well, there's two aspects to that, Anup. I mean, we're just that much of a bigger company, and, you know, processing volumes have been very high. And so as a result of the growth in the business, we're going to have additional inventory levels. The other thing is that we've actually had a fundamental change in one aspect of our business. Is with the acquisition of the Arbel Group, we now have no intercompany sales any longer. You see, we used to actually account for those as related party sales because the Arcelin family owned wholly Arbel and only owned shares in Alliance. So we used to sell them product. Well, today, as a result of the fact that we're 100% owners of that business, we actually just account for transfers of inventory from Canada or Australia or the U.S. to Turkey are just inventory transfers. And so you see they're not sales because under our revenue recognition policy, they'd only be recognized as a sale once they're received in Turkey, processed, and sold on to a customer. So you are going to see in times of transfer of product higher inventory levels, although that doesn't necessarily translate into inventory risk, Anup, because that product may actually be sold already, but it's just awaiting arrival, processing, and sale. So it may be sold, the currency is hedged, and, you know, we have a trade finance instrument, but it stays in inventory until it's actually shipped and invoiced.
Okay, so then can you help me understand how much of that $130 million of inventory is actually at risk? Because, I mean, that's a fundamental part of your story, at least as I understand.
Well, hold on, though. I'm saying that it's not at risk. I mean, the product that we shipped to Arbel
is
actually sold, right? So it's product that's being shipped there for processing and selling. So I'm not suggesting that a big portion of that inventory is actually at risk because the story remains the same. Our global commodity positions, you know, in lentils, which is our major product, we would hold those at a 10,000-ton, you know, long or short position as kind of a maximum risk management band, you know, which if I assume a $100-a-ton volatility in the commodity, I'm talking about a material exposure of $1 million, so a very immaterial amount. So don't mistake the inventory value level for commodity risk because they're not synonymous.
So, I mean, even from a cash generation perspective, on $180 million of revenues, you generated about $3 million in cash flow. Big reason for that is that you consumed a lot of cash on inventory. When is that going to get turned into actual cash?
Every quarter, as we get into seasonally slower periods, of course, the inventory is then transferred into a sale. It becomes a sale. It becomes a receivable. The receivable is collected. And if you look at our quarter two, quarter three cycle, we would have much less of a working capital requirement than we would in quarter four and quarter one.
So we should expect to see a big chunk of that coming through then in Q2.
You should.
Yep.
Okay.
It's part of the normal cash cycle and the seasonality of the business.
And then just how many tax credits do you have, or what's the order of magnitude of tax credits remaining at Arbel?
By the end of 2010, the tax credits that we received as a part of the business combination will be exhausted. So if you look at the consolidated statement of income, you actually have the current taxes, which if you look at that on a percentage basis is about a blend of 25 and change percent. And then if you take out the future, you know, tax recovery, it lowered our tax rate to about 13%. But you should be considering that a blended tax rate going forward, if we look at a 20% flat tax in Turkey and a declining North American tax rate of, let's say, 27 or so, you're looking at a blended of about 23 to 23.5. So by the end of 2010, the benefit of that tax, future income tax asset will be exhausted. But it was a really nice little buy for, you know, the shareholders of the company. When we did the combination, we got a nice size tax advantage.
So 23% sort of order of magnitude for the balance of the year?
Yep.
Okay. All right, and just last question, then I'll go back to the end of the queue. What was the EBITDA contribution from Arbel during the quarter? Can you give me a rough sense of that?
Yeah, it was about $5.3 million. So they're on track. I mean, seasonally, you know, this is, you know, kind of the overall. I'm sorry, Anup, I'm just looking at my figures. About $5 million.
Thank you.
So they're on track. I mean, the business there, I'm very pleased with the way it's going. You know, we're obviously looking at a very transitional period in Q2 for them where, you know, we're not shipping Canadian stocks because of price risk, and yet they're waiting for their new crop to come in it'll be early June to mid-June by the time large amounts of product are available. But it really looks good for quarter three and beyond, where supplies will be available in the local market, and, you know, the demand has been a bit stagnant, so pipelines are empty. So when we have product, we're going to fill them back up.
The next question comes from Harry Simons of SimonsSays.com. Please go ahead.
Harry Simons, SimonsSays.com.
Okay, Harry, how are you?
I'm doing good. We talked once, but we didn't quite get the interview done. But here I am. I'm in Winkler, Manitoba. I want to ask about the former Perron plant. How's that going?
Oh, you know, Harry, it's going fantastically well. I mean, the southern Manitoba, you know, region for us represents kind of a new origin of sourcing. So, you know, we're involved now in the dry edible bean side. That's going well. We've just completed a major expansion of the packaging capability, where we've added a second robot in for packaging pulses and specialty crops grown in southern Manitoba. We're involved now in sunflower seeds and buckwheat and, you know, a few other specialty crops grown around there. So, you know, I couldn't be happier. And, you know, we have a team from Saskatchewan going over there this week looking at some further, you know, little expansions and tweaking of the capacity. So we're pretty excited about the opportunity at Parent Seeds.
So what kind of changes do you anticipate? I mean, these were kind of in-house. You could do what with the existing facility, I guess, eh?
Yeah, we're going to be expanding the capacity to handle more dry edible beans and more sunflower seeds. So those are kind of the two areas. So black beans, pinot beans, navy beans, sunflower seeds, that's really a strong focus for us in that area.
More contracting and those kinds of things. What is that market like?
You're going to see us very active in Manitoba, North Dakota. That's a big priority for growth.
What's the edible bean market like right now?
Strong consumption. The U.S. market, Western Europe, is continuing its demand. We have continued growth of demand in Mexico and South America. So we're very optimistic about our ability to compete there. So, yeah, let's move on to the next one here. What do we got?
The next question comes from Robert Winslow of Wellington West. Please go ahead.
Good morning, or good afternoon.
Yes, Robert. How are you?
Good, thanks. I'll ask my one question and get back in the queue. It's really about M&A. Murad, you raised $80-odd million here recently, and how would you characterize the way you're going to spend that money? Are we going to see you put the brunt of that capital to work by the end of this year so that we've got some accretion to earnings by 2011? Are we going to see, are these going to be tuck-ins? Are these going to be some, bolt-ons or bigger deals, and where might they be? That's kind of one question with seven parts. Thanks.
Good one, Robert. We've been very clear. Beans, chickpeas, rice, and pasta, you know, where you're going to see us, you're going to see in the next 12 months, you know, our ability to put this money to work. At the same time, I'm not going to rush into spending it just for the sake of spending it, but, you know, we took the money because we want to continue to grow, and, you know, it will be divided between our different business platforms. You're going to see the bean side focused very much on, you know, some further expansion in North America. That's our, original 12-month focus. So, you know, expect North Dakota or the U.S. In general, North Dakota, Minnesota, to be a potential focus for us to expand the reach that we've started with the Parent Seeds acquisition on the dry edible beans and sunflower seeds. On pasta, it's simply an expansion of the Arbella capacity. I mean, we added line number four last year at the acquisition time. You know, I'm happy to report to shareholders that 2009 year-end, we totaled up 46 countries of export for Arbella. And so with that long-cut demand for spaghetti and fettuccine driving further short-cut demand for penne, rotini, and other types of pasta, we need more capacity on the pasta side. So we'll be adding line number five into that over the next, you know, 6 months cycle. On rice, we leased a mill in the Trakya region of Turkey to take Turkish origin paddy rice and convert it into white rice and make it 500-gram packs. And we are looking at both a build versus a buy decision in the Trakya region of Turkey to, you know, establish a permanent processing presence in rice. And you're also going to see us, Robert, taking a look at both Australia and India to further look at our lentil platform globally, and lentils and chickpeas, you know, where we're looking at those two origins as providing us, you know, further growth in Australia and South Australia near Adelaide. For those of you who were over in Australia recently on some of the investor tours, you recognize that Melbourne shipping and Adelaide shipping are very independent, and they're independent production origins. So when I look at Australia, I still see, even though weather's volatile, we see it being a part of our future. And we see India being a major consumption market for products shipped out of Canada, U.S., Australia, Turkey, but also local production of lentils and also chickpeas for export being a big opportunity for us. So that's where you're going to see it focused, and that's where I think we'll go.
Thanks, Brad.
Sean Pratt, I think you're next.
Sean Pratt of Western Producer Newspaper. Please go ahead.
Hey, Sean, how's it going?
Good. How are you, Brad?
Good, good. Thanks.
You talked a lot about the convergence in new crop and old crop lentil prices, and I know our readers would be interested in hearing your thoughts on that a little further. What, you know, when do you sort of see this convergence happening, and are new crop prices going to come up or old crop prices fall?
Well, I think, Sean, I mean, we've already saw, you know, a pretty major, you know, change over the last, say, 45 days where, you know, part of the reason for the commentary is to have, you know, investors understand that when you're in this current period of March through June, you know, basically the world pulse market goes through a major transitional period where, you know, as you know, reporting to your readers, the growers in Western Canada, where we've been hit with a Indian new crop, which we all know wasn't very strong. We have a Turkish crop, which is looking very good compared to last year. And we have record plantings in planned for Canada and for the U.S. And then we're in a position where, you know, strong demand fundamentals but increased supply just leaves a bit of uncertainty in the market. And so, you know, what we see is we see very predictably cautious demand on behalf of importers in the world. And so we have, you know, seen the divergence between current crop and new crop on lentils, let's say, in Canada. And if we look at about 45 days ago, we'd have been at 20 cents a pound for new crop and 30 cents a pound for old crop, whereas today you'd be at around 24 or 25 cents for current crop and 20 cents for new crop. So we were already halfway converged with current crop coming down, new crop not moving up. I think that you're definitely going to see, you know, that convergence happen in the next 30 days because, you know, we're now with the warm weather and the sunshine, you know, lentils are getting in the ground and Turkish crop will start coming in the next 14 days. So we're expecting the prices to converge and to move, you know, towards the start of the new crop level. I'm still very optimistic, though, that lentils are going to remain a very profitable crop for growers. And with strong fundamentals, the crop will move.
So are you saying new crop is going to stick in that 20-cent range?
You know, Sean, you've known me long enough now that I can't give you that kind of a price, you know, view. I just view demand fundamentals as being strong enough and growers in Canada being disciplined enough that I believe that, you know, we're in a range of, you know, 10% down, 10% up. And what you see is what you get.
Okay. Thanks.
All right.
As a reminder, anyone who has a question may press star and one at this time. We have a follow-up question from Mark Robinson of Cormark Securities. Please go ahead.
Okay. I just wanted to ask and maybe give you the opportunity to provide your thoughts on your exposure to some of these volatile overseas markets. You know, I think there might be a view out there in the market that you're, you know, highly levered to, you know, international marketplace. And so I thought I'd just, you know, give you an opportunity to sort of respond to that and, you know, how you expect demand to react with the continued volatility overseas.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a couple of things. I mean, you know, one of the questions, you know, abound out there is, you know, with the close geographic proximity of Turkey to, you know, Greece and being in the Mediterranean region, you know, what's the effect of the current sovereign debt crisis on our operations? And, you know, one of the things we like to remind people is that if we look at, you know, government debt to GDP in Turkey, you know, Turkey's been through this crisis already. Back in 2001 with a major economic crisis, a major correction in their currency, and a banking crisis, which, you know, really was related to just the fundamentals in the economy and government debt being out of control. So, you know, I think currently the debt to GDP ratio is around 48%. And so as a result of that, we see that economy is very, very strong, you know, compared to its neighbors. So when we look at overall, you know, we look at all of the major currencies of the importing nations that we sell to. They've been tracking with the U.S. dollar, and they haven't been tracking, you know, with the euro. So we're looking at a fundamental, you know, euro currency devaluation, and you're looking at, you know, ultimately other currencies tracking very much with the U.S. dollar. So, you know, we're not seeing the economic, I guess, flu that we see in Europe as really affecting North Africa, Middle East, Indian subcontinent, Latin America, and the Caribbean market demands for pulses. I mean, we're talking about relatively inelastic, you know, commodities, basic, you know, staple proteins that people are going to continue to consume. I think that the stronger thing affecting our current market is the actual, you know, price correction downwards on commodity prices, which is a very positive, you know, thing for the overall demand fundamentals of our crops. So, you know, we're not seeing this as a, we're not seeing a major effect, Mark, at this point where, you know, we've seen liquidity, you know, affected like we did back in 2008 during that financial crisis. So we're very optimistic that this is a storm that's going to be weathered and will continue on.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Next question comes from John Day of KDI Capital Partners. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, Brad. On the issue of convergence, can you expand on how that affected the timing of revenues in the first quarter, what it'll do in the second quarter and the remainder of the year?
I think basically I wouldn't see there being a big effect on quarter one. I mean, you know, quarter one, because you know, the bulk of the demand for the Indian subcontinent was done by the end of February, let's say, you know, we didn't see that having a big effect. With the convergence and the, you know, relative caution in the market is really a second quarter phenomenon. So we are going to see, you know, I think weaker sales in the second quarter. But then, as I said, in our minds, this is a normal course of activity that you see in any year where you have declining commodity prices coupled with a supply forecast that's going very high. It leads to what people perceive as price volatility risk. And so as a result of that, they're very cautious and they don't want to get caught with stock levels where they lose inventory value. Does that mean that that demand that we miss is actually gone? The answer is no. It's just a temporary, you know, postponement of the eventual demand. And so what we'll see is, and it'll play well into the supply actually for us, because our supply peaks are quarter three, quarter four, quarter one, So we're saying that caution in quarter two will lead to, you know, further strong demand in Q3, Q4. So really what you're doing is you're just shuffling the deck. So the deck will shuffle some cards from Q2 to Q3 and Q4. And so we're still viewing a very strong year ahead of us. Did that answer the question, John, or do you want to follow up on that?
No, that's good. Thank you.
All right.
We have a follow-up question from Keith Carpenter of Canaccord. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. With all the opportunities that you guys have out there on expanding your business from on the origination side, can you talk to are there new markets that you that you're beginning to sell into, so to speak, paving the way for this increased expansion?
You know, I don't know if it's necessarily more markets that we're selling into, or whether or not it's actually just an ability, or we've identified the ability to sell more into our current distribution channels, Keith. So, you know, when we talk about the new product areas, in particular on the pulses side, you know, with beans and chickpeas, I mean, it's the same importer in, you know, I met a large Mexican importer on Saturday, and he was at our office here, and we're talking about, you know, the lentils and the canary seed that we're selling him, and we're just learning about the large volume of beans that he's currently buying from our parent seeds division. So, you know, we look at the distribution, and we know it's common, but we're just refining those sales opportunities. Now, when we look at the expansion, though, it's not only about selling it. It's about having multiple origins and the most competitive origins and qualities for our buyers, no matter what the crop cycle is year-round. And so when I look at dry edible beans, you know, we are looking at consumption markets in Latin America, but we're also looking at production. And, you know, when I look at it today on beans, you know, the U.S., Mexico, Argentina, and China would be four major production origins that, you know, we want to be in. And, you know, depending on the origin, it's either an export-focused origin for us, or it could be a local production and export. So in the case of Mexico and Argentina, they produce, they consume, and they export. Those are the ones we like. In China, it's just straight export. So, you know, in China, you're really looking at, you know, disadvantaged areas like the Dalian region, you know, where dry edible beans are very advantaged for production, but other crops maybe aren't. So from that perspective, you know, we see that as an opportunity to originate beans there, ship them under a quality-controlled shipping program that we would control with our own asset, and go directly into markets in Western Europe and North America, giving our quality control program as the confidence that they need to import from China. So, you know, I think ultimately it's more a market distribution or chain development that we're doing now, where we're understanding how much our current distribution chain can take of different products, and then we're going to be matching that up with production, you know, on the tuck-in acquisition front.
We have time for one more question.
The next question is a follow-up from Anup Prahar of GMP Securities. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi. Just can you give us a sense of what your system-wide capacity utilization was during the quarter?
Sorry, Anup, you cut out. You're going to have to give me that one more time.
Can you give us a sense of what your system-wide capacity utilization was during Q1?
During Q1, I think we'd have been running, again, I'd have to check the numbers. I should have known you'd ask that question, Anup, but I'd say when we look, I mean, Turkey was still not running at very strong utilization, but we'd have been better than I think, you know, in the prior quarter as a result of some of these tenders and things we did. So we'd have been running probably in the high 50s. That's a guess.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Okay. I would like to thank you all for being with us today. I would like to remind you all that if you have any follow-up questions, you can feel free to contact us at the Regina head office, and we'd be more than happy to follow up with you. Also, one other reminder, we will be doing our very first Investors Day tour of our Regina and Williston facilities on June 20th through the 22nd, so that's coming up in about a month. If you're interested in attending that, please feel free to contact me directly, and we'd certainly be more than happy to give you some more information on that. Again, I'd like to thank you all for attending, and please have a great day.
And just as a follow-up on the investor tour, we have limited space, so, and it's filling up quickly. So if you're interested, please get your name in quickly, because we can only accommodate so many on the tours. So thank you, everybody.